Now, when Emily Dean was a child, she longed for a dog, mostly because it had become a symbol of the kind of family she craved. But her life changed when she received some very sad news. But the outcome was that she ended up becoming a dog owner and a dog lover. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Hello, Selena. How are you doing?
I'm well. Nice to talk to you.
I know. I wish I was out there with you. I'm going to pretend I'm wearing a bikini, imagining that I'm there.
Are you in London?
Yeah, I'm in my car in a bikini. No, I'm not really. I am in London, actually.
Bless you. Well, I tell you what, I know that you've described your dog as looking like the child of Chewbacca, but what an adorably cute dog Ray is.
Oh, thank you. Do you know, Selena, I honestly feel there's no point putting makeup on, making any effort with my appearance, because all anyone cares about is my dog now. It's like going out with sort of Brad Pitt or Justin Bieber for the younger one. No one cares about me. I'm the plus one.
Oh, seriously cute. Is it a Shih Tzu? Is he a Shih Tzu?
He's a Shih Tzu, but he's a Shih Tzu who is ridiculously small. In fact, I was out walking my dog the other day. I was out walking around the other day and a woman said, but he's so short.
Yeah.
And I said, I looked at her and I said, well, so am I. And she said, oh, yes, that's true.
They do say dogs end up looking like their owners, don't they?
I know. We've got the same hair. People keep saying, does he go to your hairdresser? He does. He doesn't actually have his hair done yet. I mean, you know.
Funnily enough, my Westie does as well. My Westie's got long blonde hair, so I suppose we could look alike too.
Oh, have you got a Westie? I love
Yeah, I've got three. Anyway, we digress. The funny thing is, you're not from a dog family, are you?
No. I mean, my family couldn't be anything less like a dog family. My family was a sort of bohemian, artsy media family, I guess. You know, both my parents worked in the media, and we didn't live what I felt was a conventional life. You know, we didn't have tea. I'd go around to friends' houses where we grew up in Highgate in North London, and they'd have fish fingers for tea, and you know, they would watch David Attenborough, Life on Earth, whereas we would eat the dinner party leftovers and watch weird black and white French films about adultery, you know. So that was and I would look at these Labradors and think it just symbolized, I suppose, domestic calm, you know, and constant. And we moved around a lot as well. We were sort of living in New Zealand, Australia, and we moved around England a lot. So, yeah, I suppose it was a symbol, you know, of a calm childhood, which we had an exciting childhood, but it definitely wasn't a calm childhood.
Yeah, you didn't want exciting, you wanted calm.
Yeah, and I think that's very much the case. I don't know what your childhood was like, but I tend to think it's just that sense that we're all born with to a degree that, you know, the person on the other side of the street is having a better life,
yes,
you know, which is what I always felt. But I think particularly when you're a kid and you want to fit in, and my parents were just very out there. And, you know, I mean, now that they're no longer here, as you probably know, and now I think they're extraordinary, wonderful people, you know, but when I was younger, I just thought it was mortifying because they were just so loud and actorish and would say embarrassing things. And they would sort of wake us up and say, darling, get out of the bedroom. The Sex Pistols need to film in there today. And I think, what? And I think, do the other families have to?
No,
other
I don't think so.
Get woken up.
Wow. No, I get exactly what you said. It's funny how as an adult you look back and things seem different. As a child, you really just want the norm, don't you, like other children?
Yeah, I just wanted to play Ludo, you know. I didn't want the Sex Pistols filming in my bedroom, you know.
Well, no, I get that.
Great anecdote.
But one family member you were really close to was your sister Rachel.
Yes, I was. She it's not a spoiler alert to say that she died, because the title, you know, gives it away. Everybody died. My sister died, and then swiftly followed by both my parents in a 3-year period. But typical my family, who were very sort of anarchic and did things differently, they went all in the wrong order. So my sister died first. She died when she was 43, and she died, she just had her second child. So she had a 10-year-old and a 1-year-old. And so she passed away. I don't say she passed away, actually. It's a euphemism, and I like to use the word died. They told us with her daughters that we should say died.
Yeah.
Because you have to be honest about that, you know. Otherwise, the kids get a sense, oh, has she gone to another place? Does she not want to be with her? You know, so
yeah.
So she died, and very it was very quick. You know, she got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and then she died about 3.5 weeks later. So it was brutal. And yeah, that was tough. And she was more than a sister. You know, she was my best friend. She was my stability, really. So that took me a long, long time to get over that. And obviously, go on, what are you going to say?
So I was just going to say, how long ago was that?
So she died in 2012. And then it was 2014, my mum got diagnosed with motor neurone disease.
Oh, dear.
And then she died. And then my dad died a few months after her. So it was all, you know, I mean, not to make light of it, but in some ways you have to. And I think it sort of helps to sort of, you know, I work with comedians a lot and you find yourself saying very dark things. And I would say things like, oh, this is honestly like, I binged on the box set of Grief. It's like, it felt like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like they've crammed it all into one episode, you know?
Yeah. You have to get through it how you get through it. Whatever works for you, it doesn't matter what other people think.
Yes, I think that's very true. And I think you find yourself, what I tried to do in the book that I've written, I tried to sort of talk about grief in a way that was honest, because I think it is something that we avoid, and I understand it. It's quite British, isn't it, that idea of,
yeah,
let's not talk about it. And, you know, people say, oh, do you think I should call now or leave it? And of course, as someone who's experienced it 3 times in quick succession, always call, always reach out, always text, always say. And there was a very good piece of advice I got from someone, which I always use, which is never say, how are you? Because that feels overwhelming. Say, how are you today?
Oh, that's a good
idea.
And
then you feel, yeah, because you feel you can answer that. When someone said, how are you today? I think I could sort of say, well, I'm actually okay today, you know.
Or I'm having a bad day.
Like,
yeah,
exactly. But yeah, and obviously get a dog. It's what I would advise.
Well, Rachel had Giggle, didn't she? She had a dog herself. And then
she had Mr. Giggles. And then that was named by my eldest niece, Mimi, who is 18 now, but she would have been 10 at the time. And she was absolutely in love with this. He's a half chihuahua. And I just really, I felt when my sister got Mr. Giggles, for a start, it was hard. Obviously, it was awful when I lost her, but even saying the name Mr. Giggles makes you laugh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's something that I'd be in the pit of this slightly dark place, and then I'd say, oh, we need to feed Mr. Giggles. And then I'd laugh.
Yeah.
But I found it very comforting, and I was just very moved seeing how he seemed to sort of miss her and mourn her. And was, you know, they really do, don't they? You're a dog owner, obviously.
Yeah,
and, you know, I think they're so sensitive to mood, and they pick up on things. And
definitely.
They really do. I was touched by that, and I got a real sense of, I found him very helpful. Just that thing of people, as I was saying, they don't know how to be sometimes, but dogs don't stand around waiting to think, should I ring? Should I say something? They just throw themselves at you.
It's unconditional love, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's true.
It really is. And I learned a lot from that. So then I got my own dog.
So then you got, why have you called him Raymond?
Well, do you know, there was a couple of reasons for that. One is, I hope, a sweet reason, which is I used to call my sister Ray when we were briefly in Australia, and one of the thousands of homes my father transported us around. It was like, is it Tuesday or in Sydney? We called her, you know how Aussies kind of shorten names all the time? It was like, Ray. So we called her Ray. And you know what? Raymond, when I was choosing the name for my dog with my niece, we were sort of talking about it, and I thought I wanted what I call an old pub regular's name, like an old EastEnders cab, like Derek. So I went for Raymond, and then the comic Adam Hills, I interviewed him recently, and he said something really nice. He said, I'm going to do an Australian accent. I'm allowed because I'm half Antipodean. He said, oh, no, it's really nice. He said, because it's kind of a nice tribute without being too confronting. And I thought,
Yeah, that's great. That's a great story. And apparently he's a very quiet dog, but he does snore.
He's got a bad snore. So I don't know, does your Westie snore?
Well, I've got a Westie and 2 rescue dogs, and the 2 rescue dogs do, I have to say.
Well, do you know, but you don't mind. I mean, I sort of have this thing, I tolerate, he can do anything he wants, really. But he snores, and he doesn't bark. He makes a sound like Chewbacca. It's really strange. I'm convinced he's a Wookiee, or he just... I think he just wandered out of George Lucas's studio one day, and someone saying, "Hey, has anyone seen that animatronic weird Wookiee experiment?" And I've got him.
Looking at a picture of you both now. He really is cute. I mean, all dogs are, but he's got a very cute face.
He's very, you know, and again, I don't know if you find this, I'm sure any dog lovers who are listening, I'm sure will understand what we're saying, which is you sort of don't know until you've experienced that.
No, you don't.
I've had people say to me, because you know what people are like, they can sort of say, oh, you know, someone said to me recently, oh, do you think your dog's a child substitute? Because I don't have children. Mm. And I said, no, he's a dog. But having said that, I still feel there's an immense amount of comfort that can be had from an animal and, you know, whatever it takes, really, to get you through bad times. And in my case, you know, I didn't turn to alcohol. I didn't harm anyone else. I just had the love of a beautiful puppy. And
well done,
really
you.
Nice.
Well done, because, that couldn't have been hard to get through. Now, you know, the three closest family members to you in 3 years. It's been described as a beautifully written, funny and heartbreaking story. So it sounds like it's not doom and gloom. It's the truth, but it's fun as well.
And do you know what? That was important to me because I do a weekly radio show here with Frank Sims.
I know,
And so, you know, that's very much the world I work in. And, you know, I suppose I'm interested in comedy. So, and I would see myself, I suppose, as, you know, I enjoy laughing and I hope I make other people laugh sometimes. So I just feel sometimes, you know, the best way to communicate ideas and, you know, even if it is about grief, it's through comedy. That's what makes it memorable.
Yeah.
Plus, that's life. To me, that is life. You're laughing, you're crying. You're laughing, you're crying, you know.
Must have been a great person to work with, Frank Skinner, whilst you were, you know, going through difficult times.
Going through that.
Frank is
absolutely brilliant because he's so sensitive and so intelligent, and he gives you absolutely brilliant, brilliant life advice.
Mm.
And I think the others, but he's also hilarious. You know, I mean, he makes you laugh so much. But I think the thing I really learned from Frank through working with him and through him as a person is just that sense of being your own person and having the confidence to, you know, do things your own way, really, rather than thinking, you know, it's a bit like when I wrote this book. I think before I met Frank, I possibly would have thought, what will everyone else like me to write? What should I write? And then I just thought, oh, for God's sake, I'm just going to write this from the heart and, you know, who cares?
Yes.
And actually, it turns out what people like is when you're honest, you know. So Frank's best quote ever, which I love, which I think is a piece of life advice we can all take, is you can spend your whole life trying to be liked by people, but at the end of the day, the size of the crowd at your funeral will largely be dictated by the weather. So I think...
I like that. That's brilliant. Very good.
Sort of sums it up, I think.
Yeah, brilliant. I like, I was just reading a quote that Sarah Millican said about your book. She said, this book will make you laugh, cry and stroke your dog or any dog.
Oh, it's so well, nice. She's got a lovely dog.
Has she?
She's got a schnauzer who's beautiful. Oh. And she's a lovely woman. She's very sweet. And actually, she was lovely because, you know, it's so nice when a friend reads it and says, I like it, it's great, because you feel very vulnerable, you know, at that stage. And actually, look, I'm in a fortunate position that it's out there now. Unfortunately, people seem to be responding well to it, and it seems to be, connecting with people in a way I couldn't have possibly envisaged. I mean, I get messages every day from people, lovely messages just saying, thank you, I've been scared of talking about grief, and now I feel I can open up a bit more. And do you know what that means? That honestly, it sounds like a soppy thing to say, but honestly, those are the things that mean the most to me.
I'm sure that's very rewarding. Yeah, yeah. No, it's
particularly men who I think there's pressure on them not to cry or share their feelings.
But yeah.
That feels, you know, important.
Yeah. Well, it's another one ticked off your list. You got a dog and now you've written a book as well.
I know. It feels I sort of feel so happy that I'm in the book, but also I suppose I also wanted to open the conversation about how we talk about losing people and loss and not feeling great, which some of us don't. And as I say, I think, you know, we are very encouraged to sort of internalise that. Particularly, I think Brits tend to be a bit more like that. So this was just an opportunity for me to say, look, let's just, this is for my experience, and I hope it connects with you. And unfortunately, it has. But mainly, it was an excuse to turn my dog Raymond into a celebrity. And
yes.
He's now going to become a monster and will have a rider and
demands exactly.
all over the place.
He'll become a diva, a doggy diva.
He is already. I gave him some food the other day, and he was giving me a filthy look because he said, oh, no, I've been having nicer food than this at the radio and TV studio.
Oh, bless him. Well, the book is called, it's a great title, Everybody Died, So I Got a Dog, the funny, heartbreaking memoir of losing a family and gaining a dog. It's by Emily Dean, who we're speaking to now, and it came out the beginning of March. We can actually get it from our website, tre.radio. We have a bookshop banner on there. And are you still doing the podcast for The Times called Walking the Dog?
I do, yeah. I've just had some out recently, actually. So I do them when I can, just because I'm so busy with the radio show, with the book. But yeah, I do them regularly, so there'll be more out quite soon. But as you say, yeah, it's called Walking the Dog, and it's at The Times, and it's essentially an interview with me and a celebrity with a dog. And it's a really nice way. I mean, we've had loads of people on there. We've had everyone from sort of Jimmy Carr, Jonathan Ross, you know, Gary Lineker, Catherine Ryan, Sarah Millican. And what's great about it is that I feel chatting to people over a dog walk, I don't know, you just get something different out of them. Do you know what I mean? Because it feels like when you're walking with someone, it feels like they open up, and it's a more intimate way of having a conversation, I think.
True.
I love doing it. I've just noticed I've called it Walking the Dog, and my book's called Everybody Died, So I Got the Dog. I mean, I'm the queen of the literal title, aren't I?
I will say it again for you. Everybody Died, So I Got a Dog by Emily Dean. Emily, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you, Selena.
Take care.
And give my love to your Westie and your two Westies.
I will do.
Big hug.
Oh, bless Raymond. Thank you. Take care, Emily.
Thanks, Selena.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.